The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The top stories from the KCBS Radio Newsroom. This is the All Local.
It's time now for Ask an Expert. Every weekday at this time on KCBS, we're giving you direct access to top experts in various fields. Today, California's biotech industry is facing new competition from China, and it's falling behind. With delays in funding and regulations, this is a threat to leadership in life sciences here in the Bay Area. And for more, we're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Ash Jogalekar, biotechnology researcher and scientist in residence at the Oppenheimer Project. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, to kick off the conversation, let's start with some context. Tell us about this report that was made to Congress in April from the National Security Commission on Emerging Biotechnology.
The report that you're talking about really laid out the challenges to not just California's, but America's biotechnology industry and pharmaceutical industry from China. And what they effectively expressed is that we are seriously lagging behind China when it comes not just to our manufacturing and supply chains for essential drugs and biotechnology, other assets in biotechnology, but we are also starting to lag behind in invention and innovation, which has always been our greatest strength. And they said that this is something that we should consider very seriously, and it should impact the entire gamut of approaches that we take towards shoring up our biotechnology industry, all the way from manufacturing to the hiring and training of scientists.
So how does the United States need to pivot?
Well, we need to pivot several different ways, as I point out in my piece. By making sure that we train more scientists and bring more scientists in, and that also includes refining our immigration policy so that we keep on bringing the best and brightest to our shores, but also by re-domesticating some of our manufacturing and supply chains, even if it may not be as cheap as it's being done in China, because this is not just a question of, this is not just a scientific and technological issue, but it's also an issue for national security.
Talk about the supply chain and the issue for national security. How is it a threat to national security?
So if you look at some of the critical drugs and agents that are used on battlefields and in emergency rooms in hospitals, a lot of them are being made in China right now. A classic case is heparin, which is a blood thinner that's used in ICUs during blood transfusions and also in battlefield hospitals. Something like 80% of heparin, which comes effectively from pig intestines, is made in China. And so tomorrow, if there was a conflict or there was a crisis and our heparin supply were cut off, that would have immediate impacts on the capability of our soldiers to fight on the battlefront, as well as our doctors to supply them with life-saving drugs and to save their lives.
Is this an expensive move to bring this, or is this something that could be done, maybe not in California where the research is done, but could a manufacturing plant be put someplace else? Is that feasible?
I think to some extent it is. Again, it's not going to be as cheap as China, but I think what we need to do is we need to treat these biotechnology supply chains just the way we are treating some other critical areas for national security, like semiconductor chips and rare earths. Everyone's talking about rare earths. And in both of those cases, the government, including the Pentagon, has funded critical parts of that manufacturing so that American companies can start manufacturing those things themselves. Again, they are being heavily subsidized by the government, but there are cases in which the government has clearly recognized that because it's a national security issue, they do need to subsidize those things. And they need to treat the biotechnology and pharmaceutical supply chain the same way, at least for certain critical drugs like antibiotics and antivirals and heparin.
Let's talk about the biotech industry here in the Bay Area. I live on the peninsula. I drive one direction. I see Redwood City and Foster City and all that's happening there. Of course, drive up to the city and you see South San Francisco. Can you put the biotech that's being done here and the research that's being done here, can you put that into perspective for us?
Yeah, so the biotech that, the Bay Area has always been known for biotech. This is where Genentech started. So this is where the biotechnology industry really comes from. And what is happening right now, we have this critical core of universities like UC Berkeley and Stanford, and you know, you also have universities in Southern California that are training scientists and engineers who tend to stay in the biotech in California and contribute to the biotech industry. The other thing that is, the other development that is very important is the rise of the tech industry in the Bay Area. A lot of the future of biotech is going to be the combination of traditional biotechnology with new tools like AI. And that is where the Bay Area really shines. It is probably the leading research center in the world when it comes to combining AI with drug discovery and biotechnology. And like you said, there's all these clusters. There's Berkeley, there's Redwood City, certainly South San Francisco has traditionally been known for those trends. But, you know, that is what we are looking at. And together, you know, along with the tech industry, they are employing thousands of scientists who are really advancing the frontiers of biotechnology and also a field which people are calling tech bio, which is more focused on the applications of tools like AI to biotechnology.
What impact will the cuts that have been made to NIH and perhaps the universities were waiting, maybe some have already gone into effect, what impact are these cuts having on the biotech industry?
They're already having a huge impact on the universities, because if you look at the projects that are being cut, they kind of span the gamut of important research ranging from cancer and neurodegeneration to new blood substitutes, and of course the application of tools like AI to biotechnology. What that is going to do is it's really going to do two things. One is it's going to impact the supply of scientists and engineers who work at these biotech companies. It's going to make it much harder for young students in particular to consider careers in science, because if they see that the funding is constantly being cut, it's just going to look too risky to them. But the other thing it's going to do, and this is where the China angle is very important, is that American investors and American biopharmaceutical companies are increasingly funding Chinese companies and buying assets from them instead of developing them on their own. So along with the funding cuts, if you look at that picture where there's no funding guaranteed, even from the investors for American biotechnology companies, we are looking really at an across-the-board decline in interest in scientists and engineers, and like I said, especially young students who want to go into biotech and the pharmaceutical industry here.
So these are the venture capital of people who many of them are here in the Bay Area as well, and they're choosing to invest their money in late-stage research in China rather than here in the United States?
That's increasingly the case. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not VCs who are investing in American biotechnology companies, but you know, we have to understand why something like licensing late-stage assets from China is attractive to them, because drug development in particular is an extremely risky and expensive process. So if they can license late-stage assets from China, that means that the Chinese companies have already undertaken the risk and paid all the money that's necessary for developing those assets. So clearly there's lesser risk for investors when they buy those assets instead of developing them themselves. Now, again, you know, I don't want to exaggerate that, because there's a lot of really exciting advances, including basic biomedical research, that's being funded in American biotechnology by investors. But that's certainly increasingly the trend. If you look at my piece, you'll see that I say that something like 14 deals to purchase late-stage assets from Chinese companies have already been done just in 2025. So that's certainly increasingly a trend that we see.
So what would you say to policymakers or an agency head, somebody that could make some decisions that you would urge them to take right now? What would you say to them?
Well, I think, one thing I would just say to them is wake up, right? I think a lot of this is being done to safeguard quick wins, to safeguard our short-term interests. But I think what we are doing is sacrificing our long-term interests, both in innovation as well as national security. And that's something, if we want to preserve our sovereignty, if we want to make sure that American science and innovation and medicine leads the world, it's something that they need to seriously consider, not sacrificing those long-term interests for the sake of these quick short-term.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Wins.
It used to be, it would seem that we were so far ahead. How can other countries be catching up so quickly? It's just a combination of all these factors?
I think it's the combination of all these factors. We certainly train a lot of the scientists and engineers who come from those countries. And, you know, one of the things that we should be doing is encouraging those scientists and engineers to stay here so that they can contribute to the American biotechnology industry instead of the Chinese or the Indian biotechnology industry. But I think the other thing that we have to understand is that science and technology are not secret. They are things that anyone can discover, any country can discover if they have talented scientists and engineers. And so it's really always a question of when. It's not a question of if they catch up.
We were talking to some university professors who are considering leaving the Bay Area, not necessarily in science. Are you worried about a brain drain? I mean, it used to be that this is where you would make the money. This is where the entrepreneurial spirit was. Are you worried about that changing?
I think to some extent, again, I think that's an increasing worry. Today, as of this date, I think we still have the most funded, the best research environment of any country in the world. But, you know, like we were just saying, other countries have caught up. And certainly there's high profile cases, as you know, of people leaving the United States, not necessarily in science, to go to other countries. And, you know, that's going to be one of the more insidious effects of all these funding cuts. And it's an effect that we won't see right away, but it will really play out over time in a very serious way.
Do you think that if that funding changes, say, in the next 4 years, that it could be reversed?
I think it could be reversed to some extent. But again, we have to look at the next generation of students, many of whom might refrain from going into science and technology. And it's going to take much longer to reverse that effect. But I think to some extent, certainly restoring the funding will go a long way in reversing some of the worst effects that we are seeing.
Thank you so much for being with us on Ask an Expert. The piece that he was referring to was published in this weekend's San Francisco Chronicle. It was an open forum piece. We have been speaking with biotechnology researcher and scientist in resident at the Oppenheimer Project. That is Ash Jogalekar.
Subscribe to the All Local wherever you get your podcasts and stream us on your smart speaker 24/7 by saying play KCBS Radio.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.